The Scarecrow by Ethel Lena White. This is death, thought Kay. It had come so suddenly that she felt no fear. The first pang of horror had not yet stirred within her brain. She was numb with sheer surprise. A moment ago, she had been laughing into the eyes of a man whom she believed to be her friend. They were dull eyes, dark in colour. Suddenly, they had grown dense as mud, and then burst into a green flame. Even as she stared, hypnotised by the change, his fingers shot out and gripped her throat. The supper room was of a discreet arrangement. Other couples were whispering on the other side of the screen. The orchestra jerked out jazz in a deafening blare. Kay had one moment of stark realisation. Rescue seemed hopeless. The fingers around her neck were clamped like an iron vice. Already everything was beginning to swim. The end, she thought. Then it grew dark. That was over 3 years ago. Today, Kay was, apparently, not a penny the worse for her experience. She carried no scar on her throat, and only the least bruise on her nerves. A waiter, who had miraculously chanced to glance round the screen, had been her salvation. Afterwards, she had had a conversation with the head doctor of the mental hospital, where Waring was confined. It was such a shock, she said, when he suddenly turned on me, because I always thought he liked me, quite. May I ask the exact nature of your relations? Inquired the doctor. He'd asked me to marry him, answered Kay frankly, and I had refused him, but we went on being friends. I had not the slightest idea that he harboured any grudge. Dr. Perry smiled down at her, for he liked her type, a healthy bob-haired girl with resolute brown eyes. I hope you will try to forget all this bad business, he said. Remember, you've now nothing to fear. And now, for the first time in 3 years, Kay was afraid. It was all William's fault. William was the man to whom she was engaged. He was a doctor in the nearest town, and he rang her up whenever he had a chance. The wire was their blessed line of communication, and Kay rushed to the telephone the instant she heard the preliminary tinkle. She was about to broadcast a kiss when she was arrested by his words. Look here, Kay, I've news, but don't be alarmed. There's nothing in the world to be frightened about. And then, of course, she began to feel afraid. What's the matter? She asked. Well, Waring's escaped. Involuntarily, Kay glanced out of the window. In front of her was an expanse of bare fields, with low hedges running to meet the white skyline. It looked windswept and very empty. She laughed to show William Tree that she was not afraid. Well, if he comes here, I shall be in the soup, William hastened to reassure her. I'll be over as soon as my old stinkpot will bring me. Don't worry about Waring. I'll fix everything all right. Smiling, Kay hung up the receiver. It was a definite comfort to know she would soon be seeing William. As he resembled an ardent pugilist rather than a soothing young physician, the mere sight of him would be bracing. She lit a cigarette and sat down to think, but her thoughts were curded with memories of the old hectic life, when she had been an art student at Chelsea, and the harmless flirtations which had culminated in the tragedy of Waring. Again she saw the tawdry restaurant revolving around her in mad circles of light and colour, as the fingers tightened round her throat. She shuddered. It was unpleasant to reflect that, at this moment, Waring was in her neighbourhood, hiding behind outhouse or hayrick, picking up her trail. He might be 20 miles away, or he might be near. Unpleasant, too, to dwell on her isolation. She and her mother were alone on the chicken farm, for they could afford no outside labour. And her mother, called by maternal request Milly, was at this juncture hopeless. In other respects, however, she was the mainstay of their speculation, for, while Kay